We're calling this the big time three time club here as far as our famous guests who we've had on three times. Of course, Bob Barker joining that club 2 weeks ago, and a fellow News Corp employee for the guest that we have right now, Kenny Albert from Fox Sports, joining that club, originating it actually in the fall here, but another News Corp employee who we're happy to have on here tonight. Really enjoyed the previous appearances on episodes number 63 and 84. She just got back from the huge annual World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. And again, she is one of the flagship personalities on Fox Business Network, and she is somebody who was very prominently featured. The FDH New York Bureau has actually told us that you can find posters with her visage all around the New York area. Again, she's been a great guest previously. Looking forward to this for a while now. Good to have her back on. Liz Klayman, welcome back to the FDH Lounge. How are you tonight, ma'am?
I'm great. Listen, all I ever wanted was a billboard in Cleveland, and I never got it. The ripoff.
Well, you know what? If these stupid cable companies would, get it going here and get it available on more systems, I regret that Time Warner still hasn't made it available in my area here yet. But, it's only a matter of time, Liz, and that'll happen, and we'll get you on the billboards all over town.
Well, we are doing so incredibly well at Fox Business, and people are, as Neil Cavuto would say, demanding it. And so, but Time Warner should have it. Man, I'll tell you something. They were the first in New York City to step up to the plate, so we like them. And I'm sure Time Warner would be more than happy to do the same for the area up there. Hey,
yeah.
How are you? Listen, yes, I did just get back from Switzerland, and the weather's worse here. I was in the Alps, and it's worse here. How can that be?
Well, and I was checking on Twitter today. Glad to see. I guess a false alarm for walking pneumonia. So glad you didn't end up with that.
I know. Listen, we have four Fox on-air doctors running around the building, going on various shows, and I collared one of them, Dr. Mark Siegel, and I said, bring your stethoscope and check me. And it's only slight bronchitis, but yeah, I got sick in Switzerland, but listen, everybody there was sick. All the CEOs, everybody was running around trading drugs and Mucinex in German and who knows what, but I made it through, and it was an amazing experience to see everybody from the CEO of Coca-Cola, Muhtar Kent, to the CEO of Nissan, Carlos Ghosn, to the central banker of, the Ben Bernanke of Israel, Stanley Fischer, all a bunch of journalists, just big, big CEOs running around and exchanging big thoughts of how to solve the world's problems. That's what Davos is all about.
Well, that's got to be very exciting to be there. And I want to ask you about Davos here, certainly more in a second. I want to reference back to Twitter once again here. I have to tell you, as somebody who's a huge Nick Lidstrom honk, has an autographed jersey and a case hanging up at home here. I was very happy to see you give a shout out to Team Lidstrom over the weekend on Twitter.
I almost had to cover my eyes. Team Lidstrom was not doing as well as I hoped in the beginning of the game with the NHL All-Stars. But I loved the way they put that show together. Everybody's probably going to kill me, the purists. But I loved how they had the beginning with the drama and everything. And listen, I am a hockey kid all the way. My dad grew up in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, and he played on the ice ponds with Gordie Howe back in the day when he was about 14, just for fun. Of course, we're Jewish, so he became a doctor, and Gordy became the NHL star. But it was an amazing experience to grow up in Los Angeles and be the first person in line, my dad was, in 1967 when the Kings became a franchise. And I'll tell you, watching Team Lidstrom was pretty impressive.
Exactly. And again, I'm a huge fan of Lidstrom. He's my favorite current player, certainly, and just the embodiment of class and skill and everything you would want. We've talked about it previously. Obviously, you're a very big football fan as well. Do you see, as I do, some of the parallels between the games? That obviously hockey moves a lot faster, but aside from that, it almost seems to me in some ways to be like football at 100 miles an hour with some of the scoring is about the same proportionately as far as touchdowns to goals. You got the physicality. You got a lot of different things at play here.
You've thought about this a lot. I'll tell you, I wish we had as many viewers as the NFL. The NHL needs more. I interview Gary Bettman a lot. I think that hockey is the most exciting sport in the world. Of course, I'm the daughter of Canadian parents, but my brother plays it still in an L.A. league, and you can't pull me away from a hockey game when it's on television. Football tends to be a little more plotting, but I love football, too. We just need the attention that the NFL gets for the NHL. That would be great. But now that we have some marquee players, you know, Ovechkin and all these guys, they're looking good and they're exciting. We just need to market it a little bit better and get more drama. Fox Business Network is right next door on 6th Avenue and 47th to the NHL store, the flagship store. That NHL store does huge volume. People call from all over the world. I just went there the other day to get my 6-year-old a Rangers jersey because I've got him in what's called Mite Hockey, M-I-T-E, like Pee Wee Hockey. And I wanted to get him a Rangers shirt. Of course, my husband was livid that it wasn't a Boston Bruins shirt, and I was livid that they didn't have King shirts, but we're working on it. Well, we need a little more NFL in the NHL, that's for sure.
Yeah, that same level of crossover popularity. Well, from one cold topic, the NHL and winter sports to another, Davos, getting to go there, getting to be a part of it. I really enjoyed reading your breakdown that you had of that as far as some of the, I don't know if exactly quotas would be the right word to use, but I guess in the technical sense that would be the case as far as representation of female executives there this year. And obviously you were covering a lot of different angles of it, but it was very interesting to read your column about that specifically.
Davos, for those of you who don't know, is this World Economic Forum that's been going on for a long time. And CEOs and business leaders and world leaders come from all over. This year's keynote speaker was Dmitry Medvedev, obviously of Russia. And this is a huge attraction for a lot of people because it's a massive networking opportunity. And they have these dramatic panels with topics like, you know, how we solve world hunger, and they come up with some ideas. Half of it doesn't work, and half of it, at least, it's trying, and it's sort of the beauty of mankind. But Davos has said now that the head of it, Klaus Schwab would like very much to make it humankind, more women involved, and he had been noticing over the past couple of years that there weren't a lot of women. Now, for people who don't know me, I'm a big feminist, but in the true sense of the word, meaning that nobody should get any special breaks. You really should just be treated totally equally, and that means if you have to fight for something, then you fight as hard as anybody else. You don't get special favors, but Klaus Schwab felt that we don't have enough females at this event, and that he wanted now that every so-called partner, and you pay a lot to participate. If you want to be a special partner, it's $500,000. These are for the big companies like Coca-Cola, that one of five of your participants has to be female. Now, I called it Cherchez la Femme, because everyone was running around saying, oh, shoot, we got to get a woman involved here. And I was rolling my eyes thinking, why do we have to push so hard for this? This is dumb. I don't like quotas. Until I was doing the panel with the head of Applied Materials, the world's largest semiconductor equipment maker, Tom Friedman of the New York Times, Alan Saltzman, he's a big venture capitalist, and then a guy named Dr. Xi Jingrong, who runs SunTech Power, big solar panel company, talking about innovative technologies and how those will be what drive the 21st century economies. And there were no women around. I mean, it was me and Laura Tyson, Bill Clinton's top economic advisor. She now works for the Obama administration as well and is a Berkeley professor. But there were hardly any women. And I thought to myself, okay, maybe he has to force it a little bit. But that's where we stand, and we'll see if we get more women involved. But I think there are only just a handful of Fortune 500 female CEOs.
Well, really, exactly. There clearly aren't that many, and I guess that's why the ones that are there really kind of stand out, like Meg Whitman and Carly Fiorina. We saw their backgrounds coming into play when they ran for office in California last year. And
sure.
I have to say that one of the things I really enjoyed about your column was, you just kind of laid it out there straightforwardly on this, because we've gotten really good feedback the previous times you've been on the show. I mean, our target audience, I think, basically, more or less, is younger to middle-aged males, and yet everybody seems to feel like they can relate really well to you, and I think it's because, again, you may define yourself as a feminist, but you're not dogmatic about it.
We were joking about the last time you were on here about the thing
with Geraldo and the pajamas. We were laughing about that a little bit. I like that the pieces that I've read about you, when you get asked about wardrobe stuff, you don't go into this whiny crap of "don't objectify me." You answer the question straightforwardly. I think that's what people like and can relate to about this. It's just the way that you deal with stuff.
Yeah, I'm a guy's gal. You know, I really am. I like to sit around and play football, and I can go toe-to-toe with anybody. And it takes a lot to offend me. It really does. And I think that people need to calm down, and they need to have humor. They need to act and understand that nobody's out, hopefully, to really offend anybody. Wardrobe, who cares? Yeah, I mean, let's show a little cleavage. This ain't radio for television. I mean, it's fine. It's fine. Who cares? I just love what I do, but I truly do feel, and I wish this is a little Pollyanna-ish, but I wish people were just judged on their abilities. Force them to bring in females, I guess, but sometimes they would say you need a little extra push. Some people otherwise will not include women or minorities, and there should be women and minorities, but only if you belong, only if you deserve it. You gotta deserve it. You know, I fought all the way for this career, and this really works for anybody, and no matter what you do, I never got a break. Never. And I grew up, and I didn't deserve one, okay? I had to scratch and fight for everything. I start my first on-camera market. I'm from L.A. I didn't sit there and say, oh, how come I don't get a shot at anchoring in Los Angeles? I started in Columbus, Ohio. And I paid for my own ticket out there, sold myself to the news director, said, you ought to take a chance on me. I'll never let you down. And I backed it up. And then things, after a while, it was 3.5 years, okay, gotta go, Channel 6, we're making changes, and you're not part of that, okay, instead of getting offended and suing or coming up with some false reason, it was, let me see if I can turn lemons into lemonade, and I got Cleveland, Channel 5, and started again as a reporter, worked my way back up to anchor, then got Boston. Started as a reporter, it didn't sit there and say, oh, I deserve it, I'm a female, you're not giving me a shot. You know, when I was in Cleveland, that news director, John Ray, he sent me to Hurricane Andrew. He didn't sit there and say, oh, she's a woman, she's not going to give her the shot. You know why he sent me? Because he knew I could do the best job. Now, hopefully, all of us will run into a manager or two in life who gives us that shot. But guaranteed you, most of the time, it's not going to happen. You got to fight for it hard and scratch for it and just prove over and over that you're the best person for the job. And that's how I really believe in it. And it's enough with the complaining. And if you don't like how you're being treated, and in part that's your fault, leave. Move on. Fight harder for something. And, you know, you're always going to run into people who don't see it that way for you. I mean, after 9 years at CNBC, I realized, wait a minute, my head is bumping up against a ceiling here. I can either stay and complain against what? They're giving me a paycheck. Or I can leave and take a chance on something, an unknown like Fox Business, which was a startup, as you know, and they couldn't tell me how much I'd be paying or who I'd be working with or whether it was going to fly. And 3 years later, I'm happy to tell you that election night we beat CNBC, which has been in business for 21 years.
That's okay? Tremendous.
And not only did we beat them, Rick, but we beat their numbers not just for election night, but we did better than their Obama town hall, which was during the day, and got huge numbers. So I'll take a chance on an unsure thing any day if I'm betting on myself.
Exactly.
And you bet on people, you know, that you think, well, might do a pretty good job. There you go. Take a chance in life. Flying leap.
That's what you have to do, you know. And, I mean, still one of our favorite moments in the history of the show, your first time on when you were talking about your career path, what you were contemplating at the time. Maybe I'll go be the first Jew on Al Jazeera. That is still one of our greatest lines ever in the history of the show. Obviously, that's not the path that you chose. You went over to there. And it's great because, you know, we've talked about this previously, but we've gotten a little better appreciation since the first two times we talked to you about the diverse backgrounds of the folks that are at that place. I mean, you've got some people that have come from the straight financial news background. Obviously, you came in more from news and other types of magazine reporting and things outside financial before you went to CNBC. And then a guest that we had last summer, one of your colleagues, Eric Bowling, who had the trader background, who kind of came into it from his own different angle. It's a nice melting pot that you have more and better perspectives than any other place in the industry.
Well, yeah, you know, and it's interesting. When they were figuring out how to staff the talent at Fox Business, one thing they didn't want was to look like CNBC or Bloomberg. They wanted to look different, and they weren't going to take anybody from those other networks except for sort of outliers, people who had something that they said was sort of different and couldn't be tapped to, oh, she's the face of insert other business network here, but man, do people want to learn from them. And that was an Eric Bolling, for example, who was a traitor on the floor. You know, Eric Bolling was going to be recruited by Major League Baseball when he was in his 20s, and his girlfriend's dad at the time was a trader on the floor of the Chicago Mercantile Exchange and said, oh, no, you don't. That's a 7 to 9 year long career. This could be 20 or 30. And he started on the floor learning how to do the hand signals and worked his way up, then moved to the NYMEX in New York trading oil. I've been in those oil pits. It's incredible to watch these guys speaking some type of sign language I'll never learn, yelling and screaming, and they take, sometimes they take lessons on how to project so that their voice is louder than the guy next to them. Some of them wear elevator shoes so they're taller than the guy next to them. This is pure testosterone. You want to talk of where's Cherche La Femme? There are very few women on that floor, and I'm fascinated by the women who are because they are tough mamas. I want to be like that. And then they picked me, and they picked Charlie Gasparino, who's a complete personality and a character, but he delivers. And I delivered Warren Buffett and Bill Gates for the network. I mean, this is a tiny baby on the block network, and within 4 minutes, we three were able to bring them certain elements that took years for other business networks to get, and we were really proud of that. We were proud to be part of an operation that was going to do business news for everybody and not just the super, super rich, whom we love, by the way. We adore the super rich, but we also adore the soon-to-be super rich of people who are starting with nothing but really believe in themselves and want to get up to speed on educating themselves about their 401ks and their money. And God damn it, you know, everybody deserves to know about how to make and preserve and save their money. And some of those other networks, they don't want to talk to that audience. That's small fry. And I know because I was there. And I used to say, hey, why don't we do a story on this? And then, no. I mean, that's not publicly traded. It's not $1 billion in net worth or whatever. Well, too bad. Guess what? IBM started in a garage. And the Hewlett-Packard and Google, those all started in garages. The proverbial, I borrowed $6,000. We talked to that audience, too. And I'm proud of that. And by the way, you know, I didn't have a business background. I had a let's run out and cover riots and drug busts and crack houses and murders and fires and whale carcasses and Hurricane Andrew. But they knew, she can tell, you know, when I was recruited by CNBC first, they said, well, you know, we have Business Week reporters who can distill a balance sheet. But you could get that on Yahoo Finance. We need somebody who can sit across from the CEO of UPS, which, by the way, killed it on earnings today, and say, you know what? You started as a driver, didn't you?
Yeah. I mean, that's the kind of thing right there. It takes a really good, really skilled manager to see how skill sets are transferable here. Obviously, they saw that your skill set with what you've been able to pick up, learning about human nature from your news reporting, how that would be transferable to the financial world, and it was a great play when they did that and brought you in that way. I have to ask you, because strangely enough, this is sort of like finance and economics night here on the show. Later on in the show, we've got William Cohen coming back on. I guess he's got a new book about Goldman Sachs. We talked to him previously when he had his really great Bear Stearns book that was out.
I'm sure
this is going to come up with him also, but I'd like to get your takes on this here as far as where we're at now. You've got, by all accounts, what is a pretty good recovery starting to take shape, that the last 2 years of corporate earnings and everything like that appear to finally be dribbling down here. But the huge question on everybody's mind seems to be this issue with debt, whether it be the municipalities or some of the states that are having issues, maybe foreign countries like Greece, the potential for spooking the bond markets. I mean, that appears to be the one thing that could choke this thing off. What is it that you're seeing right now about whether these things pose any kind of a threat to getting back on track?
Well, they've been there for a long time, and they were brewing. And William Cohen's amazing. And by the way, you have to tell him he was one of my professors at Andover.
Really?
I mean, I was in prep school. I went to Phillips Academy for about a minute. Went to Beverly Hills High School after that. But yeah, Bill Cohen ran the newspaper. He was the teacher in charge of the newspaper in Phillips Academy, and that's where he cut his teeth learning to spot this kind of issue. Look, I am not going to strike this totally negative tone tonight. I am very encouraged by where we were and now where we are. We have seen great earnings from a lot of these companies. Everybody's coming back. Intel has posted something like 5 record quarters in a row, and then UPS today. And you see some very healthy returns for a lot of these all-American companies. I'm thrilled. Things are not as bad as they look. Today we got a manufacturing number called the Institute for Supply Management that looked really good. The problem is, of course, we still have a very weak housing market. We have high unemployment at 9.4%. We're getting the next number on Friday for the month of January, praying it's better than what it was. But all of these states and the municipalities, they were living too high on the hog. Okay, folks. There's a reason the Bible is one of the most read books on the planet. In 7 years of feast, you put a little bit away for the 7 years of famine that you know is coming. That said, I don't really quote the Bible very often, but that's the one part I really look at a lot of times. And these states better start learning that when in boom times, you put things away. You put money away. You don't live high on the hog. And we all needed to change to a new normal. I call it, I think I've said this before, the upside-down shampoo bottle syndrome, where back during the heyday of 2005, 2006, everybody's leaving a quarter of an inch of shampoo left in the bottle and tossing it out. Now, you bet we're turning it upside down and getting that last bit. We should live that way all the time. Go back to our parents and our grandparents of the Depression era. My dad grew up extraordinarily poor in Canada. He grew up hungry, and he remembers, yet he became a world-renowned surgeon living in Beverly Hills. He hated waste. We should all hate waste, and we should all save a lot more. Now, these states are learning a big, cold slap in the face that this is now a troubled time. And you start to see smart governors fix things, okay? Andrew Cuomo just looked at the budget, tore it apart, and said, "What the heck is this?" There's an automatic 13% increase in raises every single year automatically for government workers. Why? Did they do a good job? Should we be asking that question? Yes. This merit-based pay. I love meritocracies, everybody. That's why I like Fox Business. If you deliver, they put you up front, okay? If you're a little reporter that's not really the big name and you break a big story, trust me, they'll be like Liz Klayman, who get Adam up in front. You know, Adam Shapiro's been breaking a lot on Bernie Madoff, and he's a major reporter who worked in Cleveland, by the way.
Yes,
they push him right up front. You know, Liz, we'll call you tomorrow. I think that's the way it should be. Now that should be for union workers, non-union workers. Get a meritocracy going, and I guarantee you'll get better output from everybody. That means from teachers down to, people on the assembly line, down to anchors of television networks. Let's all get based on merit versus just automatic, and this is what states are going to have to learn. Now, will some default? That's a huge and important question, and I bet William Cohen is going to have some very interesting thoughts on that. Maybe the municipalities might default. I don't think states are going to default. Munis maybe, but you know, you've not really ever seen that. And states, I mean, Arkansas 200 years ago, whatever. But we need to think positively here, and don't count out America. I am really tired of the pessimists here. And listen, we get a lot of pessimists on Fox Business coming up and saying, "Oh, the Obama administration's great." You know what? Let's give credit where credit is due. Let's give credit to George Bush in a way. I'm not one of these people who demonizes the auto workers entirely. He made the right decision by bailing out the auto industry. And you hear that from some free marketeers, too, who feel, wait a minute, we need manufacturing in this country. Now, do we do it again? We better never do it again. We better learn from our mistakes. Okay, now over to the Obama administration for some good things that they have done. They continued on George Bush and Henry Paulson's path of making sure that things were stabilized. And then you saw in the midterm election, boy, he became more business friendly pretty fast because he wasn't centrist enough for a lot of people. And I like the way the free market and politics work in this country. It's not the best system, but I mean, it's not the only system, but it's the best system. It's all we've got, and I like democracy. I'll pick that any day. And I think there are good things about this president. There are good things about George Bush. Bad things on both sides. But let's want our president to do well here, okay? That's an all-American way of behaving. And we need to look at some of the good here and say, all right, one foot in front of the other. We got a good manufacturing number. We got a bad construction, new construction, home starts, and things like that. But moment by moment, it's looking slightly better than it was. That's the best we can afford at this point. It was the worst recession since the Depression, and it's just too bad we got into this in the first place. And we better learn that you don't give cheap money for as long as Alan Greenspan did.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right about that. And by the way, I appreciate you making me feel like as one of these waste not want not cheapos that I was ahead of the curve. So I'm glad to feel that way from talking to you.
Amen.
But I want to go back to something you mentioned the last time you were on. You brought up a concept that I was unfamiliar with, and I like when that happens. I like to feel like our guests are really getting a chance to, our listeners are getting a chance to really learn something. You mentioned about dark pools of liquidity, and I've since kind of looked into that subsequently. I've been kind of alarmed by some of the things that I've read after you first mentioned it. In the last year plus since you were on, what have been some of the developments with that, and is that a concept that alarms you at about the same level that it did in the summer of 2009 when you mentioned it?
I was really worried in 2009. I guess I'm less worried now because May 9th, we had the flash crash a year ago, May 9th was the flash crash, and I'm sorry, this past May 9th, and boy, that got really hairy. The market fell, and I was anchoring at the time, 900 points in about 3 minutes, and it was a technical issue, but we still don't really know what caused that. And it was, I mean, they could pinpoint it down to one operator. And so I think dark pools, well, for those of you who don't know, are these off-the-books trading operations. There's some in Kansas City. I mean, who even knows who these people are? But they're not like the New York Stock Exchange or the NASDAQ, where you can have a lot of transparency. They're less transparent. I'm less worried today about that. High-frequency trading is a little problematic, but after the flash crash, I talked to Bob Greifeld of the NASDAQ and Duncan Niederauer of the New York Stock Exchange, and they put a lot of stops in place. Make sure that if something like this happens again, where you see, say, for example, a stock like the Washington Post shortly after fell dramatically, Accenture on the day of the flash crash, in a flash fell down to pennies from whatever the heck it was, $50, more than that probably, and then it popped right back up again. So they put in certain stopgap measures to make sure that this stuff doesn't happen again. So that's an example of good regulation that I think might ensnare dark pools a little bit. That some of the regulators are looking at these things, and the CFTC, the Commodities Futures Trading Commission, is keeping a very close eye on this. But there are things that get worrisome, and it's funny, you don't really know a bubble until it pops right in your face. Nobody wants to believe that it's a bubble. They like the boom times. And I can remember questioning the housing bubble in 2004-05, back when I was at CNBC. And I said, boy, this sure looks a lot like the dot-com bubble when you have people flipping condos in Boca Raton from 1 minute to the next. And I got vicious hate mail. This time it's different. You're anti-American, Liz, for questioning real estate. It'll never go down. The real estate's a bubble that can't pop because it takes too long to sell a piece of real estate. Oh, we learned that fast, but that's not true. And nobody wants to hear from a messenger who's worried about something. So what is the next bubble, you ask? Commodities look scary. People are saying pile into oil right now. It's got to go higher. Yeah, it does until it doesn't. And the herd is a scary thing. When you're with it, you're running fast. When it turns, like you look at a flock of birds, for some reason they're going in one direction, and with a flick of a feather or a bug that may spook them, who knows why, they all turn direction. And you can get stampeded hard. And that's why I say with an investor out there, an individual investor, dollar cost average, put a little bit in every month, do your 401k. Over time, the stock market has returned 9 to 13%. Not the worst thing in the world. Stocks are usually the best thing to put your money in over time. Over the past 10 years, hasn't been quite that. But look, had you put your money in March 9th of 2009, the bottom of the market, you'd be really, really in the money right now. So do what Warren Buffett does. At the worst points, buy good companies going through bad times. Starbucks was an $8 stock. On March 9th, they had to shut down 600 stores. I looked at them and I said, you know what? Starbucks is not going away. Now, 20-something bucks. You know, same with a lot of these names. They all got beaten down. don't be scared of scary times. That's the time. If you're going to buy a little stock here and there, wait till there's a scary moment and then buy the ones that you've wanted all this time, because guess what, folks? They're now on sale.
Starbucks was $8. I mean, that's embarrassing when your stock goes for less than one of your cappuccinos. That had to be bad PR.
But it was just they got swept down, and a lot of good companies go through bad times. That's when you want to buy a stock.
Oh, absolutely. No question about that. That's a
Apple
very...
Apple at one point was 17.
Wow. That's, I mean, those are good examples. And again, you know, what you're talking about is better, sounder reasoning, the kind that you get from Fox Business, as opposed to some of this, you know, casino capitalism crap with the high-frequency trading and, you know, some of these other things like that. Much better off. You know, certainly it'd be better off if we all went by strategies like what you're talking about, and I think everything would be on a much sounder footing. Liz, we always like to give our guests a chance to plug anything and everything. So in addition to Fox Business and encouraging, you know, more cable and satellite systems to pick it up, take it away with anything else you like.
What do I like now? I'll tell you, I really feel that I just want everybody to be more knowledgeable. So I'd say read the Wall Street Journal. And the articles are now so well written and so understandable. Remember when I first picked up a journal in 2000, let's see, it was actually 1998. I got a call saying you have an interview at CNBC. I ran downstairs. I was living in Cambridge at the time, working at Channel 7 in Boston. Ran downstairs, bought a Wall Street Journal, couldn't understand a dang word I was reading. All, you know, mergers, acquisitions. It was now Rupert Murdoch took over the Wall Street Journal. It is so readable, and you will broaden your knowledge base. Couple that with calling your cable company complaining bitterly that you don't get Fox Business, and that actually has worked. My mother-in-law got it done in the South Shore of Boston. I really feel that be knowledgeable, read. Read. Kids don't read enough, and that to me is really important. I wrote a book called The Best Investment Advice You'll Ever Receive, I've ever received, and I interviewed the richest people in the world, and they gave me the best investment advice they had ever read. You'll read a couple of chapters. A few of the people have been indicted since I wrote the thing, but that's a joke, but some of them have. But, you know, you'll learn. You want to go to where the smart people are and learn from them. You should learn from your own mistakes, but learn from the mistakes of others as well. And you learn from people who have started businesses and then failed and then started them again and gone to bankruptcy and the brink and then come back again. You know, there's a guy named Howard Lutnick of Cantor Fitzgerald. He lost 680 employees in 9/11, including his brother. He only had 900 employees, so he was left with a handful of people and a broken heart. And today that company has come fighting back, you know, in 10 years, and he's bigger and better than ever. And I saw him in Davos, and he's the most optimistic person. He never strikes a negative note. He came fighting back. Now, if he can do it, we all can do it.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great microcosm for us all, hopefully, a great example. Right there. And I agree with what you said about the Wall Street Journal since Uncle Rupert took over. I think it has seen a little bit of, you know, an improvement since then. By the way, speaking of News Corp, there's a new product starting for the iPad, right? New daily newspaper?
That's right.
Okay.
I interviewed him about that. It's called the Daily, and it's going to be a newspaper for tablets only. And this is a big thinker. I mean, Rupert's in his 70s, and he is the sharpest, youngest thinker, you know, right up there with somebody like Buffett, who just looks at things differently. I mean, these people are where they are today because of the way they look at the world, and they are unafraid to try things and take a chance on things. And he's starting the Daily, and that's tomorrow. They're launching it officially. And watch Fox Business. We'll have the big launch. We'll be watching all of this, and Rupert Murdoch will be interviewed on Fox Business. We're really excited about it. Listen, I love journalists. So the more the merrier. Another newspaper, bring it on. This is great, especially when everybody called it the death of journalism when newspapers were struggling. But radio's huge. And can I just say something about you, Rich?
Yeah.
You are one of the best interviewers. You do your research, and you are just terrific. It is such a pleasure to talk to you. I'm thanking you.
Oh, thank you, Liz. I appreciate that. That means a lot coming from you. You've had a really great career. And I got to say, I mean, we love everybody we've gotten a chance to talk to at News Corp in the different places, whether it be Len Robbins from The Post or Ellis Hennigan or Eric Bowling or Kenny Albert. But we have a special place in our heart for you. You've been on three times. You're one of the ones we really brag about having had on a lot. And I just can't wait to do it again.
Any time you call, I'm there. And Ellis is terrific. All those guests you named, and tell William Coe and his students doing okay.
I will. Hey, my research didn't turn that up. I didn't know you were a student of his. That's tremendous. Well, that's great. I tell you, we can't wait to do it again, Liz. Just thank you so much, and go Browns.
You got it. Go Browns. My hope springs eternal. Super Bowl next year, baby.
Yes,
I'm there.
Yes.
I'm there.
Holmgren's going to do it. Oh, thank you so much, Liz. We really appreciate it.
Bless your heart. Me too.
Oh, take care. The great Liz Claman, everybody, from Fox Business. We really appreciate having her on, and we appreciate her taste in who to put over, most definitely. I knew I could get a grimace out of Paul Velfi across the glass here. Now that I've done that, now that I've accomplished that goal of getting said grimace.
How much did you have to send her for you to be put over like that? That's all I want to know.
We'll talk about that during the break.